Russia continues its attacks on Ukraine's critical infrastructure.
Multiple Russian missile strikes shook the Zaporizhzhia region capital overnight Thursday, as the city continues to be a focal point while Ukraine pushes its counter-offensive on the southern front.
And with winter quickly approaching, Kyiv issues recommendations for the coming cold weather.
The government is urging citizens to stock up on warm clothes, candles, flashlights, and batteries. They've also asked people to limit their use of energy-guzzling appliances like ovens, washing machines, or kettles during peak consumption times.
And later in the program, the state of the war on the battlefield and where things may be headed. Today is Friday, October 14th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Miller. Russia has continued its targeted attacks on critical infrastructure across Ukraine. It's a strategy Moscow's military has been following since Monday. From the Associated Press, Charles Deledesma is up first.
Multiple Russian missile strikes shook the Zaporizhzhia region capital overnight Thursday, as the city continues to be a focal point while Ukraine pushes its counter-offensive on the southern front. Zaporizhzhia's regional governor says several explosions have been reported in the city overnight at infrastructure facilities, causing fires. Russian forces have struck the regional capital and surrounding area continuously in recent days and weeks, creating concerns about the safety of the nearby nuclear power plant. I'm Charles Tillodesma.
The latest intelligence update from the British Defense Ministry says that in the past 3 days, pro-Russian forces have made tactical advances toward the center of the town of Bakhmut in the Donetsk Oblast. Joining us from Kyiv with more is Anna Chernikova.
The city of Bakhmut is one of the main points of fighting in the east front line, and particularly at the Donetsk region front line. Ukrainian general staff was mentioning that Russian forces have certain advances there. However, the fightings are extremely heavy at the moment, and situation is changing every hour, and it's really difficult to say who has, you know, more advance in that area. We hear that Ukrainians also have some points of control along the front line, but again, we just know that there are heavy fightings happening, and that actually Russian forces are getting closer to Bakhmut.
Anna, you know, attacks throughout Ukraine continue by Russian forces, and I understand that you recently had the opportunity to speak with someone who was in Kharkiv about their experiences as these attacks were taking place. What did they share with you?
Yeah, today it was a very bad day for Kharkiv and for Zaporizhzhia. So in terms of Kharkiv, there were at least 4 hits by the rockets. This is what we have confirmed by the representative of the local government there in Kharkiv. So we know that one of the hits caused a big explosion and fire. I had an opportunity to talk to the person who, the resident of Kharkiv, who is living in Shevchenkivsky district, which is in the north part of Kharkiv. And this district is one of the most shelled districts. And he told me that actually one of the hits was very close to his building. And it was quite scary in terms of, the building was shaking and everything was shaking around. And actually it was not really time for them to go to the bomb shelter because when these missiles hit, air raid sirens started. So it was all happening at the same time. So they didn't really have time to go and find shelter.
And I really quickly, I wanted to follow up with you on something we talked about yesterday, and that was the story of an 11-year-old boy from Mykolaiv who was recovered from rubble after the attacks then. He's since passed away, but I was wondering if you could share some information about how many children have been killed during this time of war.
The number is more than 1,000 children in general since the beginning of the invasion.
Anna Chernikova reports for us from Kyiv, Ukraine. Anna, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
Russian President Vladimir Putin said on Friday that there was no need for massive new strikes in Ukraine and that Russia was not looking to destroy the country. Putin told a news conference at the end of a summit in Kazakhstan
that his call-up of Russian reservists would be over within 2 weeks and that there were no plans for further mobilization. He also repeated that the Kremlin position was that Russia was willing to hold talks, although he did say that they would require international mediation if Ukraine was still willing to take part. I also mentioned on yesterday's program that the Russian-installed governor of Ukraine's southern Kherson region proposed that residents take their children and leave for safety. It's one of the starkest signs yet that Moscow is losing its grip on territory it claims to have annexed. Reuters' Tamara Lindstrom takes it from here.
A flight of civilians from Kherson would be a major blow to Russia. Kherson is one of four partially occupied Ukrainian provinces that Russia claims to have annexed in recent weeks, and arguably the most strategically important. Since the start of October, Ukrainian forces have burst through Russia's front line there in the biggest advance in the south since the war began. Missiles struck Zaporizhia again this week, raising fears that a disaster at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant could release radioactive clouds or result in a reactor meltdown. Rafael Grossi, head of the UN's nuclear watchdog, the International Atomic Energy Agency, traveled between Russia and Kyiv in another effort to establish a safe zone around the plant.
There has to be a recognition that this nuclear power plant cannot be a military target of any sort, in any way, intended or unintended. So this is why we are trying to work on a perimeter. We are trying to work on a way that can exclude it from any exchanges.
The plant has been occupied by Russian troops since early in the war. On Thursday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Moscow must be made to comply with the demilitarization of the nuclear power plant.
Reuters reporter Tamara Lindstrom. The Biden administration's next security assistance package of $725 million for Ukraine is expected to include munitions and vehicles, but not significant new capabilities or counter-air defenses. That's according to U.S. officials briefing Reuters News on Friday. Be sure to visit voanews.com/flashpoint for additional and continuous updates on the war throughout the day. As the Russian invasion of Ukraine continues, the other small ex-Soviet republics watch the advancing Ukrainian army with hope, but also with concern. The fear is palpable that Russia could one day fall on them, and this has led to the mobilization of civil society, such as in Estonia, with volunteer groups like the Estonian Defense League. Marcus Harton narrates this story.
Karen Larma is a bank worker, mother of a 13-year-old girl, and for the last 4 years, a volunteer in the Estonian Defense League, a group of Estonian volunteers who receive military training in their spare time and whose aim is to support the Estonian army in an emergency. Here, they learn what is necessary to respond to a possible invasion.
I have learned that I'm capable of so much more than I thought before I joined the Estonian Defense League. I know that I can manage in the forest, and I'm really good with guns.
Today, the volunteers have their first contact with what will be their new American-made assault rifle. Once they master its use, they will be able to have it in their homes, a measure aimed at providing a quick response to a possible enemy attack, something that, they tell us, has much to do with the tactics learned by observing the Ukrainian army from a distance.
I think the right word to use here is preparation. So what we can see is that Ukrainians have been very well preparing themselves, and that is the key concept in order to react in a professional way.
Estonia is a country of less than 1.5 million people, and its armed forces are minuscule, barely 7,000 strong. In a hypothetical confrontation with Russia, its capabilities would be very limited. But after Russian forces attacked Ukraine, the number of volunteers increased to almost 30,000.
Defense League is a voluntary-based military organization, then the will of people is important. Training can be provided, but what we are based upon is the will.
Many here see Estonia's NATO membership as a guarantee against a possible Russian attack. But even so, Estonian military sources tell us the only way to guarantee the security of Russia's neighbors is by defeating Moscow and ending its policy of aggression.
You know, it's very simple. About outcome of this war in Ukraine, Ukraine must win, because otherwise the Russians, they only will have time to prepare for the next. And the next, they could be Moldova, could be anybody.
As the future of Europe is decided in Ukraine, Laurima and 30,000 other Estonian volunteers are preparing on their weekends for a moment that everyone here hopes will never come. For Ricardo Marquina in Tallinn, Estonia, Marcus Harton, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. As we have previously mentioned on this program, Ukrainian families are bracing for a harsh winter after Russian missiles and drones have rained down on cities across Ukraine this week. Reuters' Angela Johnson continues her coverage.
When the power is out, Ukrainian Lyubov Polly plays with her baby in darkness, illuminated by candles and the light on her phone. Families like hers are bracing for a harsh winter after Russian missiles and drones rained on cities across Ukraine this week. The strikes hit power plants and electricity stations, damaging around 30% of the country's energy infrastructure.
When this happens, we just play together in bed, laid together. I light the candles and the flashlight on my phone. I couldn't take a shower or bathe my baby because I can't do this in the darkness with a flashlight. Just a small wash. It hasn't influenced his feeding because one light is enough to do this. I breastfeed. It's all good.
The 23-year-old's family fled the advancing Russian occupation in the southern Kherson region when she was pregnant and moved to Kyiv in April. She tearily explained that while no part of the country was safe, it had been less scary in the capital than in Moscow-controlled territory.
But it's not that scary in Kyiv because all my close ones are near. My mom is here. It was very frightening then when my mom was there and I was there in Kherson. I didn't know in the first days especially.
President Volodymyr Zelensky's government said power had been restored to millions of people, but warned that Ukrainians should prepare for more blackouts. Russian missiles and drones struck 28 energy installations over 3 days this week, according to the Ukrainian government. Moscow denies targeting civilians. Authorities say power has been restored to more than 4,000 towns and villages since the strikes, but the government is urging citizens to stock up on warm clothes, candles, flashlights, and batteries. They've also asked people to limit their use of energy-guzzling appliances like ovens, washing machines, or kettles during peak consumption times. Some Kyiv residents like Sonik Markosian were already prepared when the lights went out. She recently started a business making candles in the small kitchen of the apartment she shares with her boyfriend.
We started candle business a little bit, just started. So I had all the materials at home that I needed for the candles. And I had some ready candles in the cafe and at home also. We are planning to make more candles and to have more materials because of this blackout.
So far, the government's pleas have had some impact. Ukraine's prime minister said consumption dropped by 10% between Tuesday and Wednesday without giving specific figures.
Angela Johnston of Reuters News. So what exactly is the state of the war on the battlefield and where might things go? VOA Georgian service reporter Ian Mermishvili spoke via Zoom with retired General David Petraeus, who was also previously the head of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, while he was at the Cypher Brief Threat Conference at Sea Island in the U.S. state of Georgia, and that's where they begin their conversation.
Russia has long been punishing Ukraine. In other words, just striking non-military targets, going after civilian infrastructure, The targets this time seem to include a considerable focus on power generation, electrical distribution, and so forth. They've clearly increased the amount of that, at least since the early days of the invasion. But it's really all they have left that they can do. The terrible dynamic that confronts the Russians right now is that because the Ukrainians have mobilized so much vastly better than have the Russians, and the Ukrainians have the arsenal of democracy, the United States providing arms, ammunition, other material, along with other Western countries, given these factors, Ukraine now has a larger and much more capable military on the field in Ukraine than does Russia. And there's really nothing that Putin can do about it, certainly not in the short or even perhaps medium term, maybe not at all. His referendum at gunpoint was meaningless. The annexation, similarly so. The Ukrainians are already liberating some of the areas that Russia annexed, these four provinces or oblasts. And you're seeing the Russians retreat on the battlefield. The Ukrainians have mounted very impressive offensive operations. Those are continuing. And the partial mobilization is not going to provide the kind of well-trained, well-equipped, fit and determined soldiers that Russia needs to reestablish its defensive lines.
Yeah.
Now, over time, as the area that Russia controls is shrunk down by the Ukrainians taking their territory back, it will become somewhat easier for the Russians to solidify their lines. But even then, the Ukrainians, again, have just done so much better at recruiting, training, equipping, organizing, and now employing forces than Russia has, that a country that's less than one-third the size of Russia has a larger and much more effective military on the battlefield. The one capability the Russians do retain is the ability to punish. But the question then is, how long can they continue doing that? When do they start to run out of ammunition, given that their military industrial base is dramatically degraded?
So President Putin said that it was a revenge, basically, for, as you said, a punishing act for the bombing or the bombing of the Kerch bridge by the Ukrainians. Now, if the question then is, if Putin can mobilize such a massive attack in just 2 days or just a matter of week, a couple of days, is this really a punishing act, or is this one of the last acts that Russia can really display to show its strength?
Well, again, this is the remaining capability that Russia has. What we don't know is how large is their arsenal of these kinds of missiles and rockets and long-range systems. They have been using these in quite considerable numbers. And given that their industry is in such a degraded state to produce any more, they could actually be in trouble if, in fact, some intelligence officials in the UK have said that they believe the Russians are starting to run out of ammunition. Again, I've not seen that kind of statistic or assessment publicly available, at the least, other than that particular statement. So I don't know how much longer they can carry this out. But the other dynamic here is, I think that he's probably had this plan for quite some time. They know they have the targeting information. It's not that hard, actually, to decide on a number of targets, put the coordinates into the systems, and then launch the missiles and rockets at those targets. What is, again, terrible, horrific, is how many of these targets are civilian infrastructure.
You said that if Putin were to use a tactical nuclear weapon, then the U.S. and the allies will have an option to take out his conventional military force wherever we can see them. What did you mean by that?
There will be a range of options, and it will be very considerable. There will be lots of creative thinking employed in that. What I was describing is just one possibility, which would be a U.S.-led operation, again, presumably with some allies, that would not use nuclear weapons in response to Russian use of tactical nuclear weapons, thinking it's probably a bad idea to start up the ladder of escalation because one doesn't know where that ends, but could actually focus on Russian forces in Ukraine, perhaps even on the Black Sea, and do so with conventional weapons that the U.S. has. And we have very considerable capability that could, again, further set back the Russian cause and Russian capabilities on the Ukrainian battlefield.
That's retired General David Petraeus speaking with my VOA Georgian colleague, Iya Mirmishvili. And finally, millions of Ukrainian school children are returning to the classroom despite air raid sirens that are still interrupting lessons. With more than 2,000 school buildings around the country destroyed, educators are working hard to rebuild and bring normality to the children's lives. VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gongadze visited a village near Kyiv, where Russian occupiers destroyed the local school and kindergarten.
Bohdanivka was under Russian occupation for 20 days. Russian forces turned the local school and kindergarten into a base and a hospital. When the Ukrainian army came to liberate the village, the Russians set fire to school facilities, reducing them to ashes. Walking amid the ruins of her life's work, the school director recalls how she ran with her teenage daughter at night across a field and a forest for safety, and how devastated she was when, on her return, she saw what happened to her school.
School and kindergarten in a village, it's the heart of everything. So this was the most painful thing that happened in our village. When we learned that the school was on fire, we hoped it could survive. But soon we learned that there was nothing left of the school.
Standing in the place that was her office, she speaks of how technologically advanced her school was and how she dreams of bringing her student back here. She's pushing to rebuild the school as soon as possible. More than 300 school children in this village did return to the new school year, and local authorities are trying to accommodate the families and bring normality to the children's life. Alexander Kutsenko, who oversees the local government education system, says that all the children in this village have resumed their education in nearby facilities.
At this time, we are working on rebuilding the education facility. We understand that the country is at war and there is not enough money, so we are hoping for help from investors in terms of rebuilding.
For now, as a temporary solution, this local cultural club is reorganizing to host the school. The civil society initiative Safe Ed Foundation, led by former Minister of Education Hanna Novosad, is helping with this project and others around the country.
Russia is not only having the war against Ukrainian people, it is also having the war against our education system. So if you look at the scale of destruction, it is just enormous. So it is very hard not to notice that they are very deliberately destroying our schools. So more than 2,000 schools around the country are damaged. There are hundreds and hundreds of settlements and cities, villages like this village of Bohdanivka, where there are no school, no kindergartens, no access to education whatsoever. And they do it very explicitly from ideological reasons as well.
Despite the devastation, learning facilities for children are coming back to life.
We are arranging here a so-called digital learning space. So this will be a space for kids who live in this village, where they will have access to devices that are coming within the next week, where they will have access to internet and will be able to either work alone or do their online lessons.
Children and teachers are eager to participate and learn. Even on Sunday, children return to their damaged school and join the effort to bring their community back to life. Miroslava Gongadze, VOA News, Bohdanivka, Ukraine.
And that's going to do it for us this week. On behalf of the entire team here at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.